Sun's Week in All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Happy October and welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. It's the fifth day of competition at the World Athletics Championships in Doha, Qatar. Medals will be awarded Tuesday evening in four events: the women's javelin, the men's pole vault, the men's 200 meters, and the men's 800 meters. On Monday night, the women's 800 meters final was held. And let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Halima Nakai, who won Uganda's first gold medal in Doha in the two-lap race. Halima set a Ugandan national record with a time of 1 minute and 58.04 seconds. And here are a few fun facts about newly crowned world champion Halima Nakai. Halima will celebrate her 25th birthday on October 16th. Halima has represented Uganda in numerous international competitions, including this year's All-Africa Games in Morocco, last year's Commonwealth Games in Australia, and the 2016 Olympics in Brazil, where she was the flag bearer for Uganda in the closing ceremony. South Africa's two-time Olympic champion Caster Semenya was not allowed to defend her 800 meters world title in Doha after challenging the IAAF's recently introduced testosterone regulations. Before the world championships began, IAAF president Sebastian Coe said the rules are not about one athlete, but are designed to level the playing field.
We have sought to find a navigable route through, and that navigable route, I hope, results in those athletes with that condition remaining in the sport, being part of international sport. But the responsibility of an international federation that is responsible for our classifications, our rules, our codes, is to maintain, where possible, the level playing field in competition. So those regulations have been tabled specifically with that in mind. This is not about any individual. It's not about a particular country or even a continent.
More medal results from Doha Monday night. And let's give another Sunny Side of Sports salute to Kenya's Beatrice Chepkoech, who won her first world title in the women's 3,000-meter steeplechase race. Beatrice has dominated the Diamond League circuit this year, and she ran to a championship record time of 8 minutes and 57.84 seconds. Defending world champion Emma Coburn of the United States won the silver medal in a personal best time of just over 9 minutes and 2 seconds. And Gesa Kraus won the bronze medal, setting a new German national record of 9 minutes and 3.30 seconds. Elsewhere in Doha, Ethiopian athletes Mukhtar Idris and Selemon Barega won gold and silver in the men's 5,000 meters final. Mukhtar's gold medal winning time was 12 minutes and 58.85 seconds. Norway's Carsten Warholm, who we heard from on Monday's show, successfully defended his world title in the men's 400 meters hurdles with a time of 47.42 seconds. Rye Benjamin of the United States won the silver medal, and Abdurrahman Samba finally gave the host country something to cheer about, claiming the bronze and Qatar's first medal. Meanwhile, athletes in Doha are reacting to news of American coach Alberto Salazar's four-year doping ban. The United States Anti-Doping Agency says Salazar's punishment is for orchestrating and facilitating prohibited doping conduct as head coach of the Nike Oregon Project. The 61-year-old Salazar won 3 New York City Marathon titles in the 1980s, as well as 1 Boston Marathon crown. Since becoming a coach, Salazar has guided a string of high-profile athletes, including Britain's 4-time Olympic champion Mo Farah, Benin distance runner Noelia Yarigo praised the decision to ban Salazar from the sport as good, and Canadian sprinter Jerome Blake had this to say.
The thing is, I kind of know of him because he coached some really good athletes, and, you know, he's been around for a long time from what I've heard from other athletes and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's unfortunate, you know, like, this is a sport where there's bad things going on and there's good things going on, too. So, like, you can't really dwell in the negative. So it's just like, you know, that happened, and, you know, like, they're fighting for a clean sport. So I think, you know, it's one of them things where, you know, bad things do happen and people do bad things, and, you know, you can't really let the bad things affect the sport and the growth that's trying to happen through track and field. You know, like with the absence of Usain Bolt, and most of the guys are like, you know, like it's a late championship, so most of the guys aren't like running as fast as they should be. So I mean, it's, you know, when and this stuff and with all the other like doping stuff that's coming out, you know, it's kind of unfortunate. But I mean, it's a part of it. It's a part of sport where people do, you know, things just to make themselves a little bit better than the next person that they competed against. Unfortunately, so you know, like you got to tip your hat to the guys who are like doing their best, working really hard to make themselves better without trying to, you know, do anything negative to make themselves better.
That's Canadian sprinter Jerome Blake commenting on the 4-year ban given to American coach Alberto Salazar, and Blake was speaking in Doha, Qatar. Meanwhile, attendance at the 40,000-seat Khalifa International Stadium in Doha has been dismal at the World Championships. The British newspaper, The Guardian, says the empty seats and ghostly silence have been a sad feature and a public relations disaster for athletics, the IAAF, and Sebastian Coe. I've been watching the highlights from Doha. The stadium has often looked at least half empty during the first 5 days of competition, even though large parts of it have been covered with fabric and the capacity reduced to 21,000. And that's even after the organizers in Doha gave thousands of migrant workers from Africa and India free tickets. The now-retired British athlete Denise Lewis won the gold medal in the heptathlon at the 2000 Olympics. Denise says simply, "Our governing body has let our athletes down massively." And I'm sure the governing body of world football, FIFA, might have more than passing interest in the terrible attendance figures coming out of Doha. The 2022 World Cup will be hosted by Qatar. Let's take a break now for these Voice of America programming announcements.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcast. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
If you were to talk to us from the deepest bitter part of the bottom of your heart. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
And my Voice of America colleague, Shaka Sali, will be waiting for you Wednesday night at 18:30 UTC GMT with another edition of Straight Talk Africa. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
They're playing back.
The Women's National Basketball Association Finals continue later Tuesday night here in Washington. The top-seeded Washington Mystics will host the Connecticut Sun in Game 2 of their best-of-five championship series. The Mystics won the opener on Sunday 95-86. The Mystics are led by star forward Elena Delladon, the 2019 WNBA Most Valuable Player. Delladon had 22 points and 10 rebounds in Game 1. Connecticut point guard Courtney Williams led all scorers in Game 1 with 26 points. Both Washington and Connecticut are bidding for their first WNBA championship. Meanwhile, the 12-team Basketball Africa League, or BAL, will tip off its inaugural season in 2020. At least one Nigerian club will participate in the league. To find out more, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with the president of the Nigeria Basketball Federation, Musa Kida.
We're coming from a very deep history. Deep history of always having only the Premier League being the focus of the federation. We are coming from that background where there is no pipe that feeds to that elite league, meaning that that was the only thing that existed. And then anything below, or in fact above of it, was very difficult to either discern or to put to be precise about. Having said that, the BAL is very precise. It's actually aimed at the Premier League or the champions of the Premier League. My hope is that we will start. We will have a representative. We are going to have our Premier League next month. The champions of that league will represent the country in the BAL. There's no doubt. But the level of competition that I would want to see, I think it will take us a little bit of time before we get there.
What is the MBBF doing to encourage indigenous coaches and referees in terms of training, courses and workshops?
So again, it's another historical baggage I think that we will always carry for a while. It is true, the same way I expressed how our Premier League has not really lived up to an elite league if you compare it to countries like Tunisia, Angola, and all that, who we all started all at the same time, has not lived up to. I would say the same for our own accompanying coaching and actually generally basketball officiating and officials in terms of their training and competence. So our first bold step was actually last year when we invited the FIBA to come and do some training for our statisticians, and we have a few of them now that are qualified and have a FIBA stamp. Coaching tests and training were also done sometime before the World Cup this year. We have more FIBA certified match commissioners now, and so on and so. So we intend to still go on with that, and then also on the local level, we are partnering with Ahmadu Bello University, for instance, with Coach OBJ, where we have coaching clinics, coaching training sessions where you can come out with a diploma in basketball coaching. So again, on all fronts we're attacking it. I would like that the future also tell very well on our efforts.
Is the MBBF in regular contact with Nigerian foreign-based basketball players? Do you monitor their games to know those who are fit for tournaments and championships?
The clear answer is yes, and I'm happy also to say that because of the environment we're able to foster for the players in the last 2 years of our board, these players actually now are the ones who are asking, and I'm happy to see the competition for flying the flag, wearing the national jersey. So yes, we are in constant contact with them. As a matter of fact, we have a database now where we have captured all our what I would call elite players all over the world, not just the the ones in the U.S., but in Europe, Eastern Europe, in Asia and all that. We're quite in contact with them. And as a matter of fact, they're quite happy now that they see that Nigeria is a glowing speck now on the global level.
That's Musa Keita, the president of the Nigeria Basketball Federation, and he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye in Lagos, Nigeria.
Hi, my name is Musa Keita. I'm the president of the Nigerian Basketball Federation. I'm also the secretary general of Zone 3 FIBA in Africa. I'm also a new member of the FIBA Finance Commission. And I want to say a special shout out to Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you.
My VOA colleague Gwen Uten joins us now with news of a skateboarding prodigy who could become Britain's youngest ever Olympian at next year's Tokyo Games. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Sports fans, let me introduce you to 11-year-old Skye Brown, who is on course to make her Olympic debut, along with the sport itself, at next year's Games. Skateboarding so far has traditionally been a male-dominated sport, but Skye says if boys can do it, girls can do it too.
So I think girls can do anything that boys can do, or maybe even better. Yeah, and like, because I feel like sometimes girls are scared to do what boys are doing because they're like, it's a boys' sport. Like, I can do that, but actually can do anything that boys can do.
Skye says she's ready to show the world what she can do at next year's Summer Olympics, but she first had to convince her parents, who initially thought competing in Tokyo would be too much pressure. But Skye took a big step towards making Great Britain's Olympic team after she took home bronze last month at the World Skateboarding Championships in Brazil, and her parents had a change of heart.
We weren't going to do the Olympics because my parents thought it was too much pressure, but then Team GB, Lucy Adams, she's like the boss of like this like skateboarding association. She said that there's no pressure, just get out there and have fun, and that's the way I skate. Like, I don't really think it's like a training thing, like I think it's like more of my happy place. Like, it's like a playground for me.
Skye's passion for the sport literally began on the playground. She started skateboarding in Japan when she was 3 or 4, and even before that, she said the skateboard was her favorite toy. Skateboarding legend and mentor Christian Hosoi has praised Skye's natural talent on the board, but he says Skye has qualities off the board that make her unique as well.
I guess what would set her apart is just her wanting to help people, girls, not only in skateboarding but off of the skateboard. You know, she's an amazing skateboarder, dancer, she's got $1 million smile, she speaks well, but I think her philanthropy and what she does, you know, to help girls around the world to believe in themselves, to say, you know what, you can do it. Whatever you want to do, you can do it. I love to hear her messages like that. And for me, that's what I love about Skye, is she wants to change the world.
And Skye is doing what she can to help change the world with skateboard in hand. Besides spending one half of the year in Japan and the other half in the U.S. state of California, Skye has traveled to Cambodia with Skatistan, a nonprofit that empowers youth around the world through skateboarding and education.
Since I was little, I would go to like unprivileged places and like, I just, like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, I wanted to do something because, like, I'm, like, I could easily be, like, there. Like, I just got lucky, so, like, I'm, like, I want to do something, so I decided to design a skateboard, and I also designed a sock. So basically, $10 from each of these skateboards go to the kids in Skater Stand.
And those sales have already reached $20,000. Besides Cambodia, Skater Stand also runs youth empowerment skate schools in Afghanistan and South Africa. Meanwhile, Sky hopes an upcoming trip to Tokyo will help her continue to inspire girls who will no doubt be watching.
Hopefully, like, that's why I want to be in the Olympics, to inspire girls and tell, like, hopefully when they see me, this little girl doing this crazy trick, hopefully when they see me, they'll be like, maybe I can do that too.
Sky will turn 12 just before the start of next year's Olympic Games, and if she qualifies, she will become Great Britain's youngest ever summer Olympian. We will keep our eyes on Sky Brown. And that is all from me. Sunny, back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. And Gwen, I think you can say the sky's the limit for 11-year-old skateboarding prodigy Sky Brown. It'll be great to see if she makes Britain's team for the Olympics next year. Once again, skateboarding will be making its Olympic debut as a sport at the Tokyo Games in 2020. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Let's give another Sunny Side of Sports salute to Sudan's first ever Women's Club Football League, which kicked off on Monday in Khartoum. Reports from Sudan's capital say the first match in the 21-team league was played between Tahati and Difaine. The fans clapped and whistled, and many also chanted, "Kendaka, Kendaka," referring to ancient Nubian queens. The match was also attended by Sudan's new minister of sport, Walla Essam, who said, and I quote, "This is a historical game, not only for women's sport, but also for Sudan. We will give special attention to women's sport and women's football." And speaking of women's football, the world champion U.S. women's national soccer team will wrap up its 2019 victory tour with friendly matches on October 3rd and October 6th. The October 3rd match will be played in the southern U.S. city of Charlotte, North Carolina. And the October 6th match will be played at Soldier Field in Chicago. The American women have been on their victory tour after winning a record 4th Women's World Cup trophy on July 7th in Lyon, France. The USA beat the Netherlands 2-0 in the final. I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. If you go to my Facebook page, you'll see an action photo of Uganda's newly crowned world champion, Halima Nakai, crossing the finish line victorious in Doha. And a quick shout out for Reuters photographer Lucy Nicholson, who took that photo of Halima. Magumi Davis Rakawinge, he checks in as a contributor on the Sunny Side of Sports occasionally. And Magumi also checked in at my Facebook page talking about Halima's triumph in Doha. Magumi writes, "Halima promised to get gold. She won gold. Congratulations to Nakai." Halima Nakai, Uganda's first gold medal winner at Doha 2019. And that wraps up the October 1st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Thomas Blondet. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sikus, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on the Voice of America.
This is Science in a Minute.
Back in 2016, astronomers from the California Institute of Technology generated excitement when they said they found evidence of a super Earth-sized planet called Planet 9 in the far reaches of the solar system. While this mysterious planet has not been seen so far, evidence of its existence was gathered through observations of the odd orbital behavior of several Kuiper Belt objects. A pair of physicists have now put forth a new theory that perhaps the strange behavior of the Kuiper Belt objects may not be due to the existence of a mystery planet, but instead a small-sized primordial black hole, or PBH. Scientists theorize that a PBH is a type of black hole formed shortly after the Big Bang that can have a mass as small as a tiny fraction of a gram. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
VOA.